Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the largest segment of society, to those of you who have come to realize that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and media institutions are corrupt, and to those of you who are coming to realize that so are the world's militaries, that they are counterproductive and that they cannot be fixed. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 2 hours, including this first segment with my good friend IQ Al-Rasuli, the author of Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam, it's toll-free 877-300-7645. IQ, you said something many years ago, well before I was willing to accept it as being a defining term for Islam, that you called it a crime syndicate, that it was founded as a crime syndicate, that it remains as a crime syndicate, and it's a crime syndicate masquerading as a religion. I've come to agree with you completely. Never had any issue with the evidence. It's just that I've never had any affinity, at least I haven't in the last 15 years, for religion, so I didn't have any problem calling Islam a religion. But this is a unique religion in that it is genuinely a criminal enterprise. Could you share with us how you came to that conclusion and why you were so bold in proclaiming it?
To tell you the truth, it was only because of my study of the hadith of Ibn Ishaq. When Muhammad went to Medina, and in the first 16 months he was trying to ingratiate himself with the Judaized Arabs, and he wanted them to believe in him as Rasulullah, as the messenger of Allah. And of course they refused. They knew he was a charlatan. They knew he was a pathological liar.
And they knew, by the way, that Allah wasn't God, too. They wouldn't say Yahweh's name, but they knew it. And they knew it wasn't Allah.
Obviously, that's the whole point. Yes. They knew that Allah, the God of Muhammad, is not the same as the God of the Bible. There was no way on earth they would turn. Right. So when he turned against them, and before he turned against them, he turned against the Quraysh, his own tribe.
Right.
He used Medina as the center of operations. And it was so obvious. It was like, literally so obvious. It was like a mafia. Exactly how the mafia worked, let's say, in Sicily. They used Sicily to dominate the area, a surrounding area. And by how do they do it? By terrorizing people. By slaughtering people. By subjugating them. By raping them. Always, always shaking them down. And that's exactly what it is. So I thought of an expression. I said Muhammad was the leader of the first organized crime syndicate in human history. And it stuck. I never deviated.
Yeah. Yeah, the only thing that I would differ on at all is that nothing Muhammad did was all that organized, but he certainly created a crime syndicate. And when you now review, and, you know, my transition chapter in Prophet of Doom is I presented Muhammad's life chronologically and set his the Quran into the context of Muhammad's life and reordered chronologically the transition chapter between Mecca and Medina is pedophile pirate. He was a land pirate. He literally based his entire existence, his entire reason for existing was to rob those who wouldn't submit to him and to reward those who would fight on his behalf as terrorists, as criminals, as a mafia, really, raiding and robbing and raping his foes.
That's
obvious.
Yeah. It is. I mean, this is the remarkable thing about Islam. The moment somebody with an open mind, you don't have to be a genius, reading Ibn Ishaq alone to start with.
Right.
All you have to do is read Ibn Ishaq, and everything is open. Everything, every disgusting human characteristic that you can possibly imagine resided in Muhammad.
Correct. Yeah, for me, it was the realization that Muhammad's first act, as he fled Mecca in shame. And he fled Mecca in shame on his own fault. I mean, the Meccans realized he was a fraud, that he was only in it for sex, power, and money. They offered him sex, power, and money so long as he would incorporate more of the of the Kabas, which was their meal tickets, gods, into his religion, since he was at the time touting Ar-Rahman, which was a Yemenite rock deity. And they said, if you will incorporate those, our Kaaba rock gods into your religion, we'll give you exactly what you want, sex, power, and money. And Muhammad did. There's Quran statements attributing deity to three of the Kaaba's goddesses. And then Muhammad acknowledged that all of Allah's messengers speak on behalf of Satan. It's called the Satanic Verses. And following that, he was made to be a laughingstock, and he immediately said, well, to counter that, he had his imaginary ride to Jerusalem, where he claimed he flew on a winged ass to Jerusalem during the night and met with all of the Hebrew bigwigs, the prophets, in the temple. No one told the idiot that the temple had been destroyed many centuries previously, but he wasn't very smart. And following that, he fled Mecca in shame. And the first meeting that he has after he flees Mecca in shame, and absolute shame, was at Aqaba, right? And what was the Pledge of Aqaba?
Well, the Pledge of Aqaba was to two tribes, which were pagan tribes in Medina.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He told them, if you fight on my behalf,
mm-hmm.
you die on my behalf,
mm-hmm.
you have two rewards. If you survive the fighting, you can have the women and plunder, share of the women and the plunder, to rape them, to enslave them, to sell them, to buy them, to do whatever you like with them.
By share.
And if you die, I promise you, you'll end up in my whorehouse version of paradise.
Right. And by the way, the share was because Muhammad wanted 20% of whatever they stole.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
It's called the Pledge of Aqaba, and they indeed pledged to wage war against all mankind, correct?
Correct, 100%. Even
yeah.
even some of the people of the tribes in Arabia, one or two of the men, they told their followers, they said, do you know what you have done in this pledge? You have declared war against every human being.
Yeah.
That was 1,400 years ago they used it.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the person that said that, Muhammad had killed.
Later on, he killed him.
Yeah. The one of the things that is interesting, by the way, about this criminal enterprise is it's touted by Muslims that Muhammad was the epitome of leaders. He was a great political leader, a great religious leader, and a great military leader, and that he fought wars against armies that were trying to wipe out his monotheistic religion. And like the Pledge of Aqaba, we pledge to wage war against all humankind. No, that's really true. The concept of war and Muhammad and being a general and fighting an army, it never occurred, did it?
Never. In 75 wars or so-called wars conducted on his behalf, some of them he led, some of them he didn't. Most of them he didn't. They were ambushes. They were against civilians. It was always against people who were unarmed or slightly armed who were unaware they were going to be attacked and slaughtered.
Right.
He never fought a proper army, ever.
Ever. I mean, it was always civilians. 100% of his battles. And by the way, the ones that he didn't lead, he ordered. He inspired.
Correct.
He directed.
Yeah.
He just was too weaselly to go out himself. I mean, he was a man who was paranoid, absolutely afraid of every possible thing, including demonic spells, that anything. I mean, If you picked up four rocks instead of three rocks, I mean, he'd have a panic attack.
That's true. He used to believe, and it's in the records, by the way, he said, I used to think that I was having sex with all my wives, and I didn't have any sex with all my wives. I mean, this is in the records of Islam.
Yeah, of course. No, his hallucinating and his paranoia are very evident throughout his writing. And the fact that he was an absolute idiot. In fact, a friend wrote me this morning, was rereading Prophet of Doom, and was wondering how it is that the world does not know how stupid Muhammad's statements were. I mean, making mankind out of congealed blood, making mankind out of stinking slime, The fact that we're different colors on our skin because Allah chose stinking slime from different places in the world, and it was either black, red, or yellow. I mean, the gestation period for humankind being 6 months instead of, or 5 months instead of 9 months. I mean, he had the sun going to bed every night, and it actually going to bed in a swamp. And then he has Alexander the Great going to witness to extraterrestrials as a Muslim. I mean, the man was so stupid that you just have to wonder, how in the world did a religion emerge out of such idiocy?
Well, because the people he was dealing with, we've got to remember this.
Yes.
The Arabs at the time of Muhammad were among the most illiterate, superstitious, unlearned people on the planet. They were.
Right.
So once
they had to be illiterate, because, by the way, was there even a written version of Arabic at the time that Muhammad was allegedly revealing his Quran?
No. That's why the Quran was written two years after he was dead. The first version of the Quran was written 2 years after he was dead.
Although the oldest extant version of the Quran dates to the 8th century.
Correct.
And the earliest extant version of the Quran, which was found in the in an attic above a mosque in Yemen, Gerd Pruden was the German who was photographing it, translating it, trying to be the curator of it, and he was run out of town, threatened with his life, because his research showed that there's very little correlation between the oldest copy of the Quran, which is about 100 years after Muhammad's death, and the modern versions of the Quran, which they claim are perfect.
Exactly. It's called the Sanha manuscript.
Yes.
He spent quite a long time deciphering them and found 1,700 differences between what the Quran manuscript in Sanha had with the what we have today. 1,700 differences. That's a joke. That's not a small number of items.
Yeah, and you know, when you deal with the Christian New Testament, there are 300,000 known variances between the manuscripts that are used as the basis of translations today and the oldest manuscripts. But in that case, there are some 70 manuscripts of the so-called Christian New Testament dating to the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and early 4th century to compare the modern manuscripts to. In the case of Islam, there's only one. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. IQ, your realization that Islam is a crime syndicate operating and masquerading as a religion is not only irrefutable. I mean, it really is irrefutable. I mean, all you have to do is look at what was Muhammad's first official act in Medina, to yesterday's Yathrib. What did he do to keep his religion alive and funded?
Ambush people, to start with.
Ambush,
always ambush.
Right, Badar. Badar was the first. The eighth surah of the Quran is written specifically to justify Muhammad's murderous, immoral act of being of not only engaging in armed robbery, but also in torture and mass murder.
Correct.
As a matter of fact, what's interesting about it, in kidnapping for ransom, what's interesting about it is not only does it legalize stealing and says in Islam stealing is lawful and good, it actually says that one of Allah's messengers can't kidnap until he has committed an act of mass murder.
Yes.
It's in the 8th surah that one of Allah's messengers cannot kidnap people for ransom. Because there were rules in Arabia, in pagan Arabian society, about kidnap and about ransom and about the time that you could do it under the conditions. And Muhammad ran afoul of pagan Arab morality. So the 8th surah was there. So, oh, yeah, so long as you commit mass murder first, then, and by the way, it speaks of savage mass murder. Oh, then you can kidnap all you want.
Correct. He invented the Quran as he went along.
For the express purpose of satiating his own covetousness for sex and power and money.
Correct.
And nothing more.
Made to order revelations, every single verse in the Quran was made to order. In fact, this is remarkable. Al-Suyuti, in his book Asbab al-Nuzul, that means to explain each one of the revelations.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, Allah brought a revelation to suit the situation for Muhammad.
Correct.
In every single instance that I've studied over the period of the 23 years or 20 years that he had revelations.
Right. For example, and there was one time that his wives, and wives is really a wrong term because he had a harem full of sex slaves, those that he had captured and therefore was raping because they were slaves, little children, which was acts of pedophilia, his adoptive son's wife, which is an act of incest. So to call them wives is way too kind. But he was getting feedback, and so he actually has a Quran surah that specifically addresses his wives and tell them, you know, you either shut up or you're as good as gone. He's free to use you any way he wants to.
Isn't it remarkable? Aisha, his child bride, said to him in one of the instances where he was threatening the women,
yes.
She said, I find that your Allah is always at your beck and call. 1,400 years ago, teenager
right,
came to the right conclusion. A teenager.
Of course. Of course she did. And she was 6 years old when Muhammad started molesting her sexually. He was 50.
And 9 when he raped her.
Yes. Well, if you believe the hadith account, that when her father, Abu Bakr, and mother cleaned her up from playing with her dolls and playing out with her toys, and then threw her into a bed with Muhammad and closed the door when she was 6 and he was 50, if you want to believe that he just fiddled with her then and held off raping her for 3 years, then, you know, that is certainly what the hadith says. I don't believe it for a second.
But whether or not we believe it, it's still, he tied her when she was 6.
Right.
And he raped her when she was 9.
Yeah, he had sexual relations with her, you know, with Bill Clinton, what it is, when she was 6 years old and he was 50. And he admits to having sex with her when she was 9 and he was 53.
Correct.
That's pedophilia, no matter how you look at it.
But it's all in the hadith. Right. We didn't invent it. You didn't write it. The Zionists didn't write it.
Right.
The Muslims wrote it. His own companions wrote it.
Now, the beauty of your conclusion that Islam, and your conclusion, by the way, is irrefutable. It is absolutely ironclad, irrefutable, undeniable, that Islam is an organized crime syndicate, has implications today on how it's dealt with. And that's what I'd like to explore when Shattering Myths continues after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with IQ Al-Rasuli, the world's foremost expert on the religion of Islam, or as he would define it accurately, as an organized crime syndicate. Recognizing that Islam was conceived as a crime syndicate, Battle of Badr, eighth surah of the Quran, absolute proof, absolute unequivocal proof that Islam was founded as a crime syndicate. And the 74 terrorist raids, which were armed raids against Arabs and Jews, subsequent to that, also proved that Islam, during Muhammad's life, remained an organized crime syndicate. But in the first 100 years after Muhammad's death, did anything change? For those who would say it's unfair to summarize Islam under things that just happened during these 10 to 12 years and the religion has grown and, you know, evolved, are we being unfair to label Islam based upon its first 10 years under Muhammad?
Never. Because for the next 100 years, it was a repeat performance on a grander scale. And then he said, slaughtering 1,000 people, tens of millions of people were slaughtered.
Yeah. Perhaps even hundreds of millions.
Yeah, I didn't want to exaggerate.
Yeah. But we really don't know the number because the Muslims were illiterate and they didn't write the history down, and they killed the people that were literate and could have written it down.
Exactly. Exactly. That's
yeah.
Exactly.
We don't know. The best estimates are between 200 and 300 million people that were murdered in the first 100 years of Islam. But not only was it mass murder, though, what was the primary purpose of the murderous rage? Was it to spread the religion? Was it to gain more territory for Islam? Or was there another primary motivation for the first 100 years and what happened after Muhammad's death?
Plunder.
Single word.
Al-Anfal, chapter 8, plunder, plunder,
right.
Plunder.
Right. In fact, it was all based on the 8th Surah. It was an extension of the 8th Surah.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Chapter 8.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, there's places like Fez, Morocco, where today you look at a Shriner and they're wearing that blood red Fez. The Fez is blood red because, and even as far away as northwest Africa, the Muslims were so murderous that the streets became rivers of blood, and the Muslims would dip their turbans and their hats into the blood to show how savage they were. You know, the best killer was the most heroic individual.
Yes. Unfortunately, Muhammad gave the example. He was a coward, 100% certified coward. I have it in my own chapters. I mean, as a chapter, Muhammad the coward, and
yes.
I prove it.
Yes.
All of them are cowards. Look what they're doing all around the world.
Right.
They attack women and children. They
yes.
attack civilian aircraft. They attack people in cars. Every
right.
single time they attack a civilian, when they go to war, they lost the war 5 times with Israel.
Right.
3 times Pakistan lost the war with India.
Right.
In a confrontation between armed forces, we wiped them out every
right.
single bloody time.
Right. The only place where they could say that they had some success over an army wasn't really an army. And that was during the Crusades, where knights went. And these were just, you know, wealthy individuals who wanted to go on a junket. And wealthy individuals fighting the Muslims under compulsion won some battles and lost some battles, but both sides were, at that point, were armed, but the Crusaders were not a army in the traditional sense.
Correct. They were not an army. They were
right.
a rabble, a group of rabble. They were collected from all over Europe.
Correct.
They were, you know, civilians who joined the melee. It
yeah.
wasn't an armed self-sustaining
and mostly wealthy civilians, you know, trying to make a heroic name for themselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They were civilians.
Right. So when Islam continues to this day to be extraordinarily braggadocious, arrogant, and, you know, we're going to wipe you out. I mean, I've had 1,000 death threats. It's extraordinarily braggadocious and they're in their attitude and rage, but yet complete and utter cowards. Muhammad never attacked anyone that could fight back, ever. And he was
never.
Especially good at killing unarmed individuals, raping women, and enslaving children.
That's it. That was his forte. Throughout his life, for 20, so-called 20-odd years, especially the last 10 years in Medina, where he became the aggressive one, I mean, all he did was plunder, rape, murder, and enslave. Nothing else. There was nothing else done.
But surely, since he's called a prophet, he must have done something worthwhile. What did
okay.
he do that could be considered worthwhile?
Well, I asked Muslims, tell me, why do you call him a prophet?
Yeah.
Since he never prophesied anything. And the Quran says that he, Muhammad, cannot ever see the unseen. He's only a warner. He's only a messenger from Allah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So where is the prophecy part?
Yeah.
I get a blank.
Yeah. Why don't you tell me then, what did Muhammad say that advanced human understanding?
In fact, he regressed human understanding.
Of course.
How could
absolutely.
He advance human understanding?
What is there in the Quran that is moral?
None. Zero.
Well, there's one line in the Quran that if you take it out of context, and if you don't recognize that it was plagiarized from the Babylonian Talmud, you know, if you kill one person, it's as if you killed all mankind.
But, as we said, that doesn't belong to the Quran.
But it doesn't belong to the Quran. It's plagiarized from the Babylonian Talmud, and it's followed by Quran 533, which is, if anybody undermines or contradicts Islam in any way, I kill them, cut off an arm and a leg on opposite sides, crucify them. So you'd have to take it out of context and ignore the fact that it was plagiarized.
It wasn't only plagiarized. If you read the verse completely, it says, Allah mandated upon the tribe of Israel.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, Quran
532. It's remarkable. It doesn't say about the Arabs.
It doesn't say about
Muhammad.
It's interesting that he correctly attributed it to its source.
Absolutely.
And yet all of these politically correct morons that have television shows that, are speeches, politicians, they always quote it out of context, and they don't say that it was for Jews, and that the verse that follows is the most vicious in any religious material ever uttered.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Every single imam, every single scholar of Islam, when they're quoting that verse, they truncate it. The part that says Allah mandated upon the people of Israel, they take it out.
Right. And they never cite what comes after it.
No. No. This is Islam. Deception. Taqiyya. Deception. Muhammad said, war is deception.
I'm going to take issue with you, IQ. When you call Islam an international crime syndicate, you would the world thinks immediately of the mafia. And how the mafia is so evil, so reprehensible. You know, they deal in drugs and they deal in gambling and they kill anyone who opposes them, that sort of thing. But that's really unfair to the mafia.
I agree.
Because the mafia doesn't engage in pedophilia, do they?
No.
They don't engage in rape, do they?
No, neither in mass murder.
No.
They only kill when it's justifiable as far as they're concerned. Never in mass murder.
No. And the mafia doesn't engage in the sex trade where they kidnap little girls and sell little girls to be sex slaves.
No.
Does the mafia mutilate the genitals of their daughters?
No. Muslims do that.
Yeah. And so to compare Islam to the mafia is unfair to the mafia.
I agree. I apologize.
I'm not trying to apologize. I just want people to realize that when you're calling it an organized crime syndicate, and if they go to, it's unfair to call the religion, to equate it with something like the mafia. It is unfair to equate it with something like the mafia because Islam is vastly worse than the mafia.
Yes. In fact, there is no comparison. Honestly, there's no comparison.
Is there any country in the world where the mafia is considered legal?
Say it again, sorry.
Is there any country in the world where organized crime, like the mafia, is considered legal, appropriate, good?
No, only in Islam.
So your recognition of the indisputable fact that Islam is an organized crime syndicate should cause all enlightened, moral people to oppose it, to condemn it, to outlaw it.
100%.
And that's the genius of your conclusion.
It's not really a genius. You came to the same conclusion in a different point of view. But the conclusion is the same. They are a criminal organization. Islam is a crime against humanity. Full stop.
We came to the obvious conclusion that Muhammad created Islam and the Quran to justify his own personal quest for sex, power, and money, and that he was an immoral, mass-murdering, terrorizing criminal. and that Islam was born as a crime syndicate. We came to that same conclusion. But stating it that as emphatically as you have leads to the only rational conclusion. You know, cause and consequence. You've got a cause. The cause is a crime syndicate. Murders little girls. Enslaves children. Decapitates people. It's a mass murdering, intolerant crime syndicate. Just like the mafia, if you want to leave it, they kill you. The Quran itself says the Muslim wants to leave Islam, kill them. And it also says that if a Muslim doesn't want to engage in jihad, that they cease to be a Muslim. Right. They cease to be a Muslim, kill him, because they've ceased to be a Muslim. That being the case, then there's only one rational response, only one moral response. That is to outlaw Islam, to declare it illegal, to go after it, to shut it down.
Right. Yeah, everywhere.
Right. And in, everywhere. And you know, in a country like Saudi Arabia that is all Islamic, you can't, we don't have the right to impose our will on Saudi Arabia, but we sure as hell can stop doing business with them. We sure as hell can say we have no moral justification for selling them weapons or doing business with them. We're in this room in a conversation with IQ Al-Rasuli. IQ, when you come to realize what Islam is, then you realize that the United States and Europe are actually engaging in criminal activity. If you and I were to aid and abet an organized crime syndicate, would we be convicted and deprived of our finances and our freedom?
Of course. Yes, under the law.
If we supplied guns to organized crime, in whether it be in Europe or in the United States, we would be penalized for that, wouldn't we? Held accountable.
We would be, yes.
Yeah. So why is it that the United States government and European countries sell weapons of mass destruction to the Saudi Arabians, to the Kuwaitis, to Qatar, to Turkey?
Because they made themselves vulnerable to oil, and they shouldn't have.
Correct. We're doing business with them. So we're engaging in business with an organized crime syndicate, and we're supplying their weapons. You know, if the United States and Europe weren't buying Saudi Arabian oil, and they weren't buying, doing business with Islamic countries, would we witness the kind of terrorism we're seeing around the world?
No. No chance.
Would there be the kind of mass murder that we're witnessing in Syria and Iraq?
No. Because they wouldn't have the weaponry to use them.
Correct. The world would be in a very difficult. Would the Iranians be able to develop nuclear weapons if we weren't buying their oil?
But they are, even without buying their oil, they are doing it now as we speak.
Yeah. Well,
Obama is allowing it.
Well, and beyond that, nations like Japan and Russia are buying their oil, and many other countries are as well. So they're having no problem selling their oil.
Correct.
And without the oil, there's no funding for those very expensive programs.
True.
So we're manufacturing, we're arming and equipping the crime syndicate, and then somehow surprised when they kill.
No, we're surprised when they kill us.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Not when they kill.
Well, we're even surprised when they kill one another. They're even surprised. There's no understanding of why the Islamic State is killing so many Muslims in Iraq and why the Sunnis and Shias are at war with each other. I don't think there's anybody in the West that seems to have a clue as to why they kill each other.
I agree with you. Very few of them will have two brain cells to understand this. Really, very difficult. I mean, if our leaders are in denial, forget about the Shia and Sunni. Not the elephant. The monster is filling up the room, and they say, no, nothing to do with the monster.
Yeah.
This is not Islam. Islam is peaceful. Yeah. Islam does not incite people to kill. When every single verse in the Quran incites Muslims to kill.
Right.
So, there we go, unfortunately.
Yeah. But, you know, I had always focused on, maybe too much, on terrorism, since terrorism is the most malignant aspect of mankind's behavior today, the most caustic aspect of mankind's behavior today. I always focused on Islam's propensity to inspire terrorism, and the fact that Muhammad said, I've become victorious with terror. The Quran, Allah and Muhammad both claim to be terrorists, and they justify the use of terror, and that 99% of the world's terrorist attacks are perpetrated by Muslims. But, you know, that's really not the right way to approach this. The right way to approach it is not to say that the religion inspires terror, but to say this is an organized crime syndicate masquerading as a religion, and deal with it as you have so brilliantly established it. That's the way to frame the issue.
But we can do that. Who's listening?
Yeah, I know.
It is an organized crime syndicate. Yeah. We know. They know. In fact, our leaders, they know, but they don't know how to handle it. They honestly, I have absolutely no doubt in my mind, they know how dangerous Islam is. But they don't know how to handle the 47 million Muslims in Europe, for example, or the 3 or 4 million Muslims in America. Well, there is a way, as we just discussed, since it is a crime syndicate, then the way to deal with it is exactly what you deal with a crime syndicate.
Right.
You close the mosques.
Right.
You close the madrasas.
Right.
No hijab, no niqab, no sharia,
right.
No importation of Muslims. Any Muslim who's not yet a citizen, back to his country. Very simple.
Yes.
And then
in those countries, you stop doing business with them.
Absolutely.
Stop playing with arms. So you shut down everything that is Islamic in those countries. You can't have Qurans, you can't have a mosque, you can't have an Islamic institution. They're all declared illegal because they represent the crime syndicate. Terrorism is resolved. The problem of Islam is resolved. They could only kill each other with sticks and stones.